Today's episode, the ACC wants its own Feinbaum. Connor Stallions' doc ready for Netflix. What's going to be the biggest disaster in the Big Ten? And divisive menu item gets stripped off of McDonald's.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
In my life, I never thought a coach would be asking for more Feinbaums in the world.
Russ Dellinger.
One of the lead experts in the documentary, Dan Wetzel, maybe.
And SI's Pat Forty.
If they don't go to a bowl game this year, I mean, just bulldoze the stadium.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
I will go to the pod and got ACC Big Ten Media Week here. Classic quote from the first day of ACC Media Days. Well, this was reported by 24/7. A quote attributed, basically, a source attributing a quote to William Christopher Sweeney. Now I'm missaying his second name. This is trouble. Okay, this is gonna be a problem for what I'm going with here. Quote, you know, they're trying to drum up some interest in the old ACC, which I think there should be plenty, compared to the SEC. And here's the quote, according to a source: 2 years ago at the ACC meetings, Clemson coach Dabo Sweeney complained about the ACC network's programming, according to sources, and asked, quote, why can't we have a effing Feinbaum show? Salty language. Dabo wants a Feinbaum show to drum up excitement, some real personality. And, you know, you get all 19 of your schools or 37 of your schools or seven, how many ever schools you got. Proper NIL deal. We're right here. I'll even learn how to say all the coaches' names for the proper.
There you go.
Had you ever in your life, like I love Paul Feinbaum. Okay. But I consider Paul a friend. He's been great to me. I think we've always gotten along, but I mean, Paul was a investigative reporter firebombing newspaper columnist.
Absolutely.
Everybody was on the hot seat, and then became this incredible personality on the radio. In my life, I never thought a coach would be asking for more Feinbaums in the world. We need another.
Unusual times we live in, Dan.
We need more Feinbaums? All right. What? No.
If the ACC had a Feinbaum, he would have been ripping Dabo for the last 2 years. Yeah, Dabo, what's that guy?
Yeah, I don't know that you want Feinbaum, but we're here.
Yeah,
we can shave my head or something. I mean, what do we got to do?
Do we have to relocate to Charlotte? That might be
rough.
No.
Pat, thoughts on ACC needing a effing Feinbaum show?
Well, I mean, the ACC needs some stuff, but I would put having a Feinbaum pretty far down the list. I would start with having more fans who are interested in football. That would seem fairly important. If maybe Feinbaum can drum that up, I kind of think it has to be the other way around. The fans have to already be there, and Feinbaum taps into them. But the fire on Tobacco Road for basketball doesn't necessarily translate very well to football. So you need some fans. You need more good players. You need more good coaches. You need more good teams. You get those things. You want to add Feinbaum in on top of that? Great. Great. He's number 4 or 5 on the list of needs in the hierarchy for the ACC, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's every league seems to be kind of chasing the year-round news cycle and media coverage that the SEC football gets. I have even heard it from the Big Ten, right? I think I've said it on the show before, like folks in the Big Ten have asked me, why in March and April and May am I seeing SEC news continually talked about and coaches continually quoted. And there's a bit of the league slogan, right, in all of this. It just means more. It just means more fans that care year-round about football. And so thus, the media cares, and you have media personalities care year-round. So it does feel like every league is kind of searching for that coverage as much as maybe not just a Feinbaum, but a coverage. Maybe we all need Feinbaum in our life to do a show and talk year-round about our lives.
Wake up in the morning and say how terrible we are.
Yeah. Right. He's at the foot of our bed, you know, documenting our life.
My life's better when I talk to Paul. I mean, his show really took off. It was wild. It was always wild.
Yes.
He's very, very a talented guy. He tapped into the passion. That's really it. I mean, it's not here to elevate Paul anymore. But he's doing fine with whatever, but he tapped into the passion by letting the fans do what they, as a voice of the fan, and let the fans go. But it really took off when Harvey Updike decided to admit he had too much Bama in him and admitted to poisoning the trees at Auburn at Toomer's Corner. You know, I don't know how you create that stuff. Although, really, every team's got a message board, Harvey Updike. So I don't know how you do it, but.
Wake Forest doesn't have Harvey. Boston College doesn't have Harvey.
Everybody's got a Harvey. Kind of.
Yeah, but they don't actually, they aren't, here's the thing, they aren't actually going from Chestnut Hill to Syracuse to do damage to that university and then bragging about it publicly.
Yeah, and then publicly
revealing
it. They
may have a guy on a message
it.
Board that'll say stuff, but there's a different level.
They'll elevate their game when they see the other schools having so much fun. Crimes against horticulture or arborists or something, I don't know. I mean, listen, in the history of, I don't get real shocked by quotes too much, but in the history of media days, I never thought a coach begging for more Feinbaum. What? We really have turned the corner. We've turned the corner.
New world.
Quickly here, Ross, what was the sentiment down there in Charlotte? Jim Phillips and all that.
Yeah, well, you know, I think going in, there was a thought that obviously the Florida State and Clemson situation would be kind of the topic down there. And to an extent it was. But I think another clear angle was Jim Phillips' comments about the race for the third best conference behind the SEC and Big Ten. We heard 2 weeks ago Brett Yormark say that the Big 12, I think, had basically separated themselves as one of the top three conferences. And we heard plenty of rebuttals from Jim Phillips, a little more fiery maybe than normal during his address to the media Monday. Basically saying that by any metric, you know, national championships, academic prowess, revenue generation, that the ACC is third, or is in the top three, he said, in the top three. Didn't mention the Big 12, obviously. He did not utter that that conference's name. So clearly, there's the brewing rivalry between these two leagues as they both try to jockey to get as close competitively as they can to the SEC and Big Ten and find ways to generate additional avenues of revenue.
That sounds kind of boring.
Yeah, there you go. Well, Dan, what do you want me to do?
I'm reporting the stuff, news. Dan. I'm not blaming you. I'm
you
like,
to, you
I was
make
hoping for
stuff.
Better. nothing in the side. Maybe he's going to get his Feinbaum to do the side shot. Now, Jim Phillips is too nice.
We're number three is not the most galvanizing rallying cry. But...
Well, I'll say we did have, you know, we did have a little Clemson Florida State. So, I mean, Jim Phillips was not, you know, he kind of went in pretty hard on Clemson and Florida State, you know, calling them basically disruptors, saying that this is harmful to the league, what they're doing, and that the league will continue to fight as long as it takes in court to assure that Clemson and Florida State remain in the conference. You know, part of this is Dan is the current ESPN contract, the situation with the current ESPN contract. It's been reported before, but, you know, the standard belief is that the contract runs through 2036, and that's not necessarily the case, right? It ends.
What is time, right? Is that what they're going to argue next? What is time?
What is time? What just, is time? Is was?
Specks of dust on the universe.
Well, by February,
let's get really existential here.
Whatever is, I don't know. They could clone a bunch of fine bombs and it would still be boring out of ACC. That's the problem. You could have an army of fine bombs running around and they couldn't come up with one good topic out of that league. Let's do better.
I don't know.
Actually, here.
What else are we going to say? He had more, I think.
Oh, sorry.
We just talked. I talked to him one on one a little bit about the ESPN contract, which ESPN has the option to extend it 9 years. They have to decide by February if they're going to extend this contract by nine more years to 2036. Right now, it ends 3 years from now in 2027. So, and he said they're trying to get more value out of the deal. It's hard to think that ESPN is going to give them more value, especially when two of their biggest brands are trying to leave. But it's another avenue that the ACC is trying to explore to get ESPN to not only extend the deal, but extend the deal with more value as part of the contract. And just another way that, you know, they're trying to get teams more money, you know. And for the first time ever, he did lay out you know, the success initiative, this pool of money that programs will have access to now in the ACC. Basically, Dan, they took the expansion of the three teams. Each team got a pro rata share from ESPN, but all those programs, of course, Stanford, Cal, and SMU are not taking the full share. So they put that money in a pot and they're going to distribute it based on football success in the league. And a team can get as much as $25 million. So they're trying to close the gap. Everybody's trying to close the gap with the SEC and the Big Ten.
That was interesting that he put a dollar figure on it for the first time. And $25 million is a lot. Now, obviously, one school would have to hit everything, right, to be able to get that much. But still, you know, we're not talking about chicken feed here. Certainly more than enough to buy out your unsuccessful coach, at the very least. I have figured it out. I've done some quick research here on, you know, we're the research capital of college football.
You got your Phil Steele there.
I got my Phil Steele, and I've done some quick research. Who's number three will be decided September 6th and 7th? Okay. BYU is at SMU on Friday night. The next day, Pittsburgh is at Cincinnati. There's your ACC Big 12 matchups.
It all comes down to those two games.
A bunch of schools that have really like no real history in the leagues. So, but if somebody goes 2-0 in that, they're number three, and the other one's number four.
Gunning for bronze. Just want a podium. Just want a podium, right? That's what you hear at the Olympics.
Podium,
just wanted to get the podium.
Get on the podium.
Podium. Everything's got to do a thing. We'll see. The drive for three is really what it is, though. Can't deny it.
It is. No, I mean, it's true.
All right, at least they're acknowledging that. Everybody's just kind of acknowledging that, which is interesting, right? They're not putting out any more fights with the SEC and Big Ten.
Well, this is their own fault for having all of college sports judge success based on money. That's the problem. You know who makes more money between the Dallas Cowboys and the Kansas City Chiefs? You don't see Kansas City going around, you know. I mean, this is their fault for not saying, hey, we beat their ass last year, 6-3. Our team is undefeated. We got a bunch of good programs that are going to make noise in this playoff. We don't really care. Yeah,
we've won multiple national championships.
Yeah, we won multiple national championships. We have future Hall of Fame coaches. We have top draft picks, and that's what they should be bargaining about. But college sports has made it where money is everything. And so you sit around and go, oh, we can't compete with those guys. Why not? Why not? Sure you can. You just did.
Yep.
So
they have.
This is the conundrum of these guys obsessing about the ability to buy out bad defensive coordinators. They should not take a backseat to any league. And but they will. Big Ten, they don't have to take up there. They got the reigning champs for once.
Yeah, for once.
They're starting up. I think you're there now, Ross. Ross is doing all the work, of course. I feel like the biggest biggest buzz is going to be about Netflix saying they got a Connor Stallion stock coming out.
That'll be a topic, I'm sure, on day one here, because Tony Petitti does have his the commissioner has
he's
his
a big Connor fan.
yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure he's wearing the Connor shirts around. But cameos, he has his address Connor and it's a Q&A. So that would be great if Connor just popped in the media day. You know, just hello.
Hello.
Especially if he's still wearing the Central Michigan gear.
Yeah.
Remember when he was on the sideline right.
Actually, if those glasses really do record, they could be useful for media. Absolutely. You can wear your sunglasses, keep your hands free while recording the whole bit up there. I just find it comical that Netflix has put out an entire documentary before the NCAA even got around to do a notice of allegations.
That's a classic NCAA timeline, and some of it's on them, some of it's on the school being investigated always. But I wonder, the NCAA, I think, just kind of stood down as an investigative body to a degree for a while. And maybe they've picked things back up. I don't know where things are with our man Connor.
August 27th on Netflix.
Okay.
Connor Stout, sign stealer, they're calling it.
There we go.
One of the lead experts in the documentary, Dan Wetzel, maybe?
I don't know. We know sex sells in Hollywood, so you kind of – it'd certainly be good for ratings. But I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, yeah. I would tell you, hint for the audience. When Dan says he doesn't know what's going on, he knows what's going on.
I don't know what's going on. No, I don't know. Maybe August 27th. That's what the press release said. Sign steal.
Just in time for kickoff, baby.
Just in time to get the season going.
Perfectly timed. Of course.
In terms of the NCAA, though, I almost said it's got to be soon, right? But what am I talking about? But it's kind of like, what exactly are they still investigating?
Couldn't tell
are they
you.
Waiting for the doc?
Don't know.
Maybe they're waiting for that, Connor.
Maybe.
Connor.
Maybe.
I don't know. I think it's – look, I never thought the scandal was as big as other people thought the scandal was, which is their opinion and mine. I just think there's a lot of sign stealing and there's a lot of envelope pushing in every facet of the sport. So I wasn't quite maybe as outraged, but I certainly understand why some people were. It still is remarkable. You had this, they won the national championship. Harbaugh was suspended for three of the biggest games. You had this huge tumult over the thing. A lot of it, I think, was kind of self-created by the way the investigation went down. And part of it was the circumstances in which the story broke. But this whole thing was chaos. And then it's sort of like, oh yeah, we're moving on to next year. Kind of odd, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you think? That story totally consumed the second half of the season. And it did lead to Jim Harbaugh being suspended for three games and a cloud lingering over the top of it. You know, I think Michigan winning the title after Harbaugh was suspended and after the jig was up, so to speak, took some of the fire out of it, you know, that, okay, this team was clearly good enough to win with or without Connor Stallions. So I think that that was part of the issue there. But, you know, it's one of those things now, I like the rest of the Big Ten, I mean, the Big Ten was furious, and I don't blame the Big Ten for being furious. I thought it was completely not just pushing the envelope, breaking the envelope open and going into uncharted territory. And it was a novel cheating scandal. We usually have a lot of garden variety cheating scandals. This was at least different. But I would guess, Ross, up there, we're taping this Tuesday morning, you're going to get a lot of, that was in the past, we're done with that, from not just Michigan, but from everybody else, too, because sitting around complaining about Connor Stallions ain't going to get you anywhere.
Yeah, I would guess that's going to be the response from many. I wonder if the, maybe we'll learn it today, but I wonder if the Big Ten is, I'm guessing they gave a no comment if Netflix called, if they even called or reached out. But it would be curious, if there was any communication between the league or even league members, other schools, and in the folks at Netflix.
I think Pat's point on, I mean, certainly there's still going to be people, and this is the nature of the sport and why it's fun and why Feinbaum has a show, right? That Michigan didn't win, they cheated. Like, that's kind of just the basic premise of college athletics is you never lose. The other guys just cheated better than you.
Yeah.
They right. bought the recruit. They did this. They fixed the grade. I mean, that's it. We didn't lose. So there's always going to be people like, they should strip the title. But 13 NFL draft picks, they have 4 projected first rounders this year. And, you know, 8, maybe 10 more draft. I mean, like your entire starting 22, when you're rolling 20 to 22 deep on NFL draft picks, it didn't matter whether they knew they were going to run the ball. This was it, right? And especially, I mean, this scandal would have been so much worse for Michigan had it, as chaotic as it was, if it had come out after the season.
Oh,
their ability to say, "Hey, huddle up. We don't have your signs anymore. You changed, right?" And they still were able to beat Penn State,
right?
Ohio State, Alabama, and Washington, amongst the other teams.
Right.
You know, I think it was like the game, the day, it was almost like 2 days after the first the scandal broke. They played Michigan State, and Michigan State ran all the plays in, and Michigan won 49-0.
Right.
And I was like, okay, this isn't like, how big is this? Now, I'm not saying Michigan State was any good, but they beat the brakes off them without knowing what was coming. So, you know, I think if this scandal had happened after, oh my goodness, Michigan never would have lived it down. It was,
remember, then there would have been no ability to refute the assertion that they won by cheating, whereas they did win without cheating, as far as we know, the last 6-7 games.
Whatever. Yeah, at least that kind of cheating. There might have been something
else. Yeah, who knows what else.
I don't trust one of these programs, so I'm always like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like, they were more mad that they didn't have Connor Stallions on there. Like, he didn't grow, like, we need a Navy code cracker. I mean, how hard are these signs to steal? This is not like they're hiding aircraft carriers somewhere. It's like it's a signal to a bunch of exhausted football players that can be conveyed in like 3 seconds, right? It's like they got a picture of SpongeBob up on the on a platter board.
I don't know if they had to be a genius to break
this stuff down. Like, every team's got a guy. He's, you know, they act like, oh my God, he figured it out. Like, really? Like, defensive lineman just got knocked to the ground and a stand back up look, and
Dan,
and he figured it out.
Are we doing this again? Dan, how many people do they send out to how many games?
Oh, like,
it was
1,000,
a little more. Yeah, it was a little 50. More probably extreme than some
absolutely,
other measures that
but
other
I'm
schools
just,
take.
So we're getting rid of signs, right? Like, partially.
No, we're not. Helmets. That's one. That's another thing. We're not doing. We're not getting rid of signs because they won't wear. They won't give enough
players
a helmet communication device. Right. Number one, and number two, they will not. They prevented schools from wood, from the wearables around your wrist. So there's still going to be signage. I mean, unless you start huddling, you know, the teams that huddle, obviously there won't, because one person will get the radio call and then just tell the huddle, but there's going to be signage still. I think we'll see.
Got a signal to your wideouts. Exactly. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
No,
and on defense, the secondary, that, and so on.
Yeah. The thing that separated this from your garden variety stuff is, you know, of looking at tape and taking signs that way is, first of all, that they sent people into other people's stadiums to do it. All right. I mean,
absolutely.
This was, yeah. But then secondly, that they felt the need to do it. It's just like, that's the overkill and the hyper paranoia clandestine ops crap that tends to go along with football that you probably didn't need to do to begin with. So, like, why are you possibly doing this? And one of the big questions that was never answered was whether Connor Stallions dreamed all this up by himself or whether this was in cahoots with other people on the coaching staff. And that's what I would hope the NCAA is trying to get to the bottom
of. Yeah, that would be, obviously, that would be a huge development in it. Yeah, I'm not saying, obviously, sending guys to the thing and filming, you do it. If it didn't work or matter, you don't do it, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that. I think I was trying to say in general, like, it was like, it sounds so exciting, right? Sign stealing. And then you watch the signs and you're like, oh, like, I could do this. Like, it's not, I mean, it's just not that it can't be that complicated of a code that they have to crack when it has to be conveyed so quickly. So there's a lot to it. I don't know.
I'm just excited to hear from Mr. Stallions.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you can pay him on Cameo. He'll talk to you. All right. We'll be back after this message. All right, Big Ten. We talked yesterday about how many ACC teams they could get in. I want to play a game of biggest disaster because we don't like to hype up the season in a positive manner. How big a disaster would it be? Like, on a scale of zero, I guess, like we're throwing a championship parade to we poison our own trees. If these teams did not make the playoffs. Because, you know, it's funny, this expanded playoff provides tremendous opportunity for schools to make the playoff. It also makes expectation that you're going to make the playoff. So it kind of works both ways. And so I don't think, well, we'll play the game. How big of a disaster would it be if Ohio State didn't make it?
The biggest disaster. Yes. Yeah, it would be the biggest disaster of any other school not making it. Yeah.
Yes. Whatever the scale
even
is.
Even Georgia. Even if we went nationally, Georgia could miss it and they'd be like, yeah, we still won two titles. Like, yeah, just yeah. get, like, flee Columbus. The city may not exist after.
Yeah. No, that is the ultimate Armageddon scenario.
Yeah.
Cannot happen. If it does happen, everybody loses their jobs.
Yeah. 13, 15, maybe plus a million on a roster. You better make the playoffs.
Yeah. And I mean,
bare minimum.
You got to go at least 9-3, I would say.
Can't be worse than that. Yeah.
Can't be any worse than 9-3. Look at the schedule.
And you probably would want to, you know, guarantee yourself. I mean, because 9-3 still might be outside.
It
depends on your strength of schedule and, you know, your losses. Right.
Ohio State's going to be in this playoff, okay? But they are at Oregon, they are at Penn State, and they still play Michigan. So there are three games on the schedule that, if they lost, would not be complete stunners. Imagine if they're going into that November 30th game against Michigan. And they had lost. So anyway,
yeah, and they're 9-2. That would be bad
again.
You have to go at least 1-2 in those three games, and there is no way on the planet, unless Will Howard somehow can't play quarterback after showing he can play quarterback pretty well, that they lose those lose three games.
And there are, and but then, you know, would be an Iowa or Nebraska or something like that. They went with the Michigan schedule. Remember, Urban was criticizing the Michigan schedule, and then Ohio State did it. Akron, Western Michigan, Marshall. They should get some guys suspended. Brian Day should get himself suspended for three games because he didn't get a little time at the lake house up in New Hampshire or something. All right. How big a disaster would it be for Michigan to miss the playoff?
Scale of 1 to 10? Yeah. 3, 4. I don't think it's that big a disaster. First of all, they're still floating on the pink cloud of joy from last year. So that satiated, I think, a lot of desire. They, I think, can have some intellectual understanding that Jim Harbaugh is not there. Most of the staff isn't there. And most of the good players aren't there. They do still have some very good players, as you pointed out. But new quarterback, a lot of new skill talent and linemen offensively. Should still be really good defensively, but I can't imagine, like, Ann Arbor is not melting down in angst the way some of these other places would if they don't go.
Yeah, I agree. Do we put a number on Ohio State? Is it 10?
10, yes.
11?
Yeah. Thermonuclear. 11 out of 10. The, protect the reactor. Don't they all have nuclear reactors at these?
Yeah, losing so many people at Michigan and your coach, I think the expectations are certainly not what they are in Columbus.
Also, again, potential losses, right? But Texas, they have an incredible home schedule. Texas, USC, Pat's favorite game of the year. Oregon visits, and then they're at Ohio State. So you need to go 2-2 among those and win everything else. That would get you in probably 10-2 with wins over two of those four teams. And then you've got to survive at Washington. I mean, you never know what the Michigan State is, always tough for them. Fresno is the opener. Jeff Tedford, who we'll mention a little later, just stepped down. So who knows what they're going to be like. But, you know, at Illinois, things like that. I mean, you know, so I don't think it would be that big of a deal. All right, Penn State. How big of a disaster would it be if Penn State does not make the college football playoff? Pat?
I'm going to say 6-7. I think it's a pretty significant disaster just because, like, they've been sitting there waiting for this, for the expanded opportunity, because they can't beat Michigan and Ohio State, or have not been able to. And now you could potentially lose to those teams. And actually, they don't play Michigan this year. So you can lose some games and still make the playoff. And I think they've sat there and said, hey, we're always going to be 10-2 good. We got to get there. So I would look at it from Penn State standpoint and say they expect to make the playoff. Now, as was mentioned just a little bit ago, 12 isn't as big as it may seem, but there's a lot of schools out there that are saying, "Oh, we can go." And they're going to find out, well, it's going to get whittled down to 3 or 4 from a league like the SEC or the Big Ten. But Penn State expects to be in that top 3 or 4 in that league and to go to this game. So I think not making it after bumping up against the ceiling of Michigan and Ohio State, this is kind of a workaround, and they got to make it work.
Well, yeah, and when you look at the last 10 years of the playoff, Penn State, I think, would have been the biggest beneficiary of an expanded playoff if you consider a 12-team based on the last 10 years, I think at least 4 times, maybe 5 times, Penn State would have been in a playoff. So almost half of the last decade, they would have been involved in the playoff. So I think there is an expectation that they will be in the playoff year one of expansion. I don't know. There's a hurdle, right? They haven't gotten over that hurdle. It'll be interesting if they can do it this year.
I think this would be like an 8. I don't think this is, I mean, Ohio State would just be a shocker, but I think it's not just that, like, they expect to do it and the playoffs here, and this is really a playoff that's built for Penn State. It's that it's James Franklin's 10th season. I think it's his 10th season, maybe his 11th. And so it's like, And they've just been at that spot. If this was his second season, you know, look at Sharon Moore's first season as a coach. He's not going to be Jim Harbaugh, right? Jim Harbaugh wasn't Jim Harbaugh his first year. Probably not, at least. We'll see. Maybe he's better than Jim Harbaugh. I don't know. But I just think that coming off of two straight seasons, you go 7-2 in the league, but you can't beat Ohio State and Michigan. You don't have Michigan. You get Ohio State at home. I know people are kind of down on Drew Aller, but he's still got a lot of talent. He's more experienced now. He's back in the same system, which in college football, we have seen that second year as a starter, let alone third year or whatever, generally performs better than does really well. Even the transfers that stick around for an extra year do really well. I just think there's so much expectation of like, dude, we can't be in the top 12. I think there's enormous pressure on Penn State to make this playoff. Looking at their schedule, at West Virginia, tricky game. They should beat them, but you still going to be a tricky game. They're at USC, at Wisconsin, and they get Ohio State at home. Those are the ones that stand out. You got to split those four and then win everything else. And, you know, they're at Minnesota, like November 23rd. Like, Minnesota's not bad. Like, who knows what the weather's going to be like, or Maryland's. It's just they need to do really well. But I just think there's enormous expectation of, like, if we're not going to make this playoff, then what is this program? And it's a great program. That's the thing, right? You're going 7-2 in the Big Ten every year, most years. You're a top 15 program. But if you're a top 15 program, you got a top 12 playoff. You got to find a way. So I think it would be quite problematic.
All right. You talked me into it. I'll go with eight.
All right. Okay. Yep. Oregon Ducks. You wanted to come to Broadway. Now you got to deliver. No more hiding out in the West Coast. You're in the league. You've got all of this going. A lot of they have a great team. I think everyone's got them preseason top five, I'm going to expect. Maybe three, four. I don't know. We'll see where they're at ranking. But they're pouring tons of money in. You got Phil Knight watching over.
Before he moves on.
Yeah.
Before he moves
on. I mean, We all move on, Ross.
One day.
Yeah, one day. True. One day this podcast will sign off. The world will be a poorer place. Sure. But hey, it happens. Pat, 1 to 10 disaster in Eugene if they don't make the playoff.
I'd put it as an 8, possibly even a 9. But they have a good fan base, but they don't have a like insane fan base that's going to lose their minds quite as actively, I don't think. But in terms of talent on the field and, you know, the proverbial program alignment and, yes, getting your shot in this new league and your chance to prove yourself. If you somehow go from the top five to not making the playoff, the automatic thing that's going to get thrown in your face is, well, you're just not good enough for the big time. You left the Pac-12 and you came to a real league, and now look what's happening. So there's pressure on them to do it. Dylan Gabriel's got to step in and be really good, which I'm assuming he will be because he's been very productive his whole career. But everything else is in place. I mean, they've got a lot of good players there. Schedule is a bit tricky. Boise State, second week, no cupcake. At Oregon State, think there's going to be a little emotional freight involved there in Corvallis. Then you got Ohio State. You've got at Michigan. You got at Wisconsin late, November 16th. You know, I am rooting actively for that to be 28 degrees and snowing. Oregon is not exactly like a place where it's soft weather-wise, but 28 and snowing is a whole different deal than what you see in most of the Pac-12. So it's not going to be easy, but they should get there. They absolutely have the talent. I'm putting them number 3, I believe, or maybe 4 preseason, and they should be able to make the playoff easily.
Or Oregon, like Penn State, one of those teams that in an expanded playoff the last 10 years would have gotten in quite a bit. I think it's 3 times they would have gotten in. So if they can just do what they've been doing, they should be in the playoff. But like Pat said, you know, new league, pressure's on, obviously, and the Pac-12 is a little different. I mean, if you take out the COVID year, I think Oregon has had a 10-plus win season, four straight years. That should get you in the playoff in the Big Ten. But can you keep doing that in the Big Ten is the question. But Dan Lanning has built an incredibly talented team. And I think when you talk to coaches who compete against them, the first thing most of them say is on the defensive and offensive lines is where Dan Lanning is really stacked it, you know, and where what separates Oregon from all the other Pac-12 teams. That separator isn't going to be the same in the Big Ten, though. So that should be really interesting to watch. I would put it somewhere around what Pat, yeah, said, 7-8 level of expectation.
Yeah, solid 8. It's the expectation is there. We're in the playoff. We're going to make the playoff. A couple things. One, we do not know how a Pac-12-built team will compete week in, week out with the Big Ten. I'm not one of these guys. Oh, they may not have. Maybe they do. Maybe they have more. Maybe they, you know, who knows? But we don't know how that works. It is a transition. I'm dying to see the travel here.
Yes.
It takes something out of you when you're going east, west to east. Look at this stretch, okay? They go to UCLA. Again, they got to win all but two. They got to survive Boise and at Oregon State, okay? They get a week off. They're at UCLA, okay? That's not changing time zones, but they get Michigan State at home. They get Ohio State at home. All right, this is the stretch. Ohio State, going to be a monster game, okay?
Yep.
Then they go Friday night at Purdue. Then they come home to Illinois. Purdue and Illinois are not jokes. I don't think they're going to be – I think they'll be that Friday night at Purdue. If you beat Ohio State or whatever, that's going to be a wild scene. They get by Illinois. They got to go to Michigan. Then they go back to play Maryland. Then they go to Wisconsin. That's a lot of trips back and forth. NFL teams would be concerned about something like that. So that's an X factor that we just don't know. By the time they get to Wisconsin, are they just kind of gassed out? Or, you know, there's a lot of – and, again, weather, all of it. So we will see. All right, USC, similar deal, the travel at least. Expectations for USC, 1-10. Or anger. What is it? What do I call it? Disaster meter.
5. I'll say, you know, it's conflicted here. USC thinks highly enough of itself that they think they should be going to the playoff. And they hired Lincoln Riley to go to the playoff, not to, you know, go 8-5 like they did last year. So there is expectation, there's pride, there's vanity. But again, this is not the Ohio State fan base in terms of, like, you're not going to have 4 million people actively losing their minds when they lose a game. And their schedule is wild. I mean, it is wild. You start with LSU, you end with Notre Dame, both of whom are playoff contender teams. And then in between there, you go at Michigan, you got to go at Minnesota, at Maryland. So there's 3 trips, like Dan was saying, and that's in a span of 6 games, right? 5 games. That's October. That's September 21st to October 19th. You've got, I think, a sneaky game against Nebraska out in Los Angeles in November. You got the rivalry game with UCLA.
Wisconsin and Penn State.
The schedule. Yeah, no, the schedule is, woo, it's a rough one. So if you're a USC fan and you can look at this objectively, say, well, we lost a Heisman Trophy quarterback who went number one, and we're into a new league, and the non-conference schedule is silly, and the conference schedule is hard. I'm not that worried about it if we don't go, so I'll say a 5.
Yeah, if you look at the schedule, they might be, I mean, preseason, maybe underdogs in 4, maybe 5 of the games if you go down there. It's pretty brutal. It's not shouldn't be to the level of any more than in 5 or so. Although, as Pat did mention, they hired Lincoln Riley to and paid him all the money that they are paying him to go to the playoff no matter what.
So didn't Hiram go 7-5? Let's put it that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
All right, one more, and then we'll – I don't want to go through all of these. Like, there's no disaster meter if Purdue doesn't make it. But Wisconsin, second year of Luke Fickle. They get Alabama at home, and then the schedule is not bad. They avoid both Ohio State and Michigan. They do get Penn State at home. They play and they get Oregon at home. And then they're at USC. But they no longer have that the Big Ten West, I'm sorry, to kind of just feast on. But interesting, no Ohio State, no Michigan on the schedule. Wisconsin is a team I think would have hosted three playoff games if this system had been going since the start of the four-team playoff. Is there any expectation, or would it just be straight gravy if you actually made it?
Straight gravy for playoff.
They know gravy in Wisconsin. They know gravy.
They do. Put it on the cheese curds, man. Why not? It would be straight gravy, but there's the expectation of being better than 7-6 because that was Luke Fickle's first year. And if he can do what he did at Cincinnati, which was, you know, just kind of muddle through the first year and then blow up in the second year. Okay, if he can repeat that, then we got something. I do think we probably haven't been talking or thinking about Wisconsin enough. They'll get a chance to prove whether they're for real. I mean, Alabama comes to Madison September 14th. Then they go to Los Angeles September 28th. So by the end of September, we should have a pretty good read on the Badgers. This is the second straight year they've gone rent a quarterback. They got Tyler Van Dyke from Miami, who had some great time down there and then some not very good time. We'll see which one they've got. I think it's big year for offensive coordinator Phil Longo, who's brought, you know, kind of more of the spread no huddle to a place that's never been spread no huddle. And Fickle really wasn't that much that guy either, to a degree. But so I think he's got to show that they can actually make that work in Madison.
The Alabama game is so interesting, right? Because obviously it's Kalen DeBoer's first big test as Alabama's coach. It's, you know, a long trip for SEC team. Don't make that trip very often up north. So that should be interesting. And we should hopefully know a lot about both of those teams after that game. You're right, Dan. They would have hosted a couple of playoff games the last 10 years. You know, if the playoff was expansion, they would have been in it three times and hosted probably twice, I think, Wisconsin would have. So They're also one of those teams like Penn State and some others that we've talked about that have kind of been right on the outside. They always flirt with that 9-3, 10-2 record that would have been in often. So expectation is there. I just, you know, when you look at their schedule and it's just year two, it can't be too disastrous yet. Or can it? I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah. All right. I think it would be, I think it's pretty much gravy, but if they start making some moves, I'm not going to be surprised when Wisconsin gets good under Luke Fickle. I will not be one to be surprised. I don't know if anyone would be.
No.
All right. Rest of the league. You've kind of identified the contenders, as like most people do. Teams or players you think can jump up here, make some noise that you're kind of excited to see going into this Big Ten season? Pat?
Yeah, I start with Nebraska. Just because I think year two for Rule, he's another guy that give him a year to find his bearings and then he'll take off. And so if he can continue that track record, and then Dylan Raiola, can he step in and be the quarterback right away? You know, huge, huge recruiting coup for them. If he's the real deal and he can handle playing immediately, you know, they've got that big Colorado game week two after getting the field stormed on them in Boulder last year. They do open four in a row at home, and their first road trip is Purdue. Then they got Rutgers at home, five of the first six. I mean, then they're at Indiana. I mean, the whole first half of the schedule is set up for them if they can do it. They don't play Michigan. They do play Ohio State. They do play at USC. You know, they've got Iowa and Wisconsin late, so the back half is certainly challenging. But if they don't go to a bowl game this year, I mean, just bulldoze the stadium.
Yeah, Pat took mine. That was Nebraska's the one that I would have said as well, along with their quarterback Dylan Raiola. I visited there not too long ago, and man, their new facility is just about as nice as any in the country. It's incredible the amount of resources they have there. Felt like they just needed to get the right guy in the chair in alignment with everyone, and it feels like they have that, and they maybe have a really young, talented quarterback. So, yeah, that would be the team that I would circle as well, as a kind of a dark horse to maybe even, who knows, maybe even make the playoff. I could see a Nebraska going like a 9-3 this year and maybe sniffing around at an at-large spot.
I want to see Iowa with the new offense coordinator. And some health. As much as Iowa's offense was terrible, obviously, last year, Brian Ferentz was replaced, but they also had so many injuries. And if the defense remains at where it's at, I'm really intrigued at what Iowa could do. All they needed was just a slightly below average offense. They won last year. I mean, it's going to be a different schedule.
They went to the dang Big Ten championship game.
And they won the West.
Absolute travesty, but whatever.
Well, yeah. But, I think Iowa's the easiest team to ignore, but they're always there and they're not easy to deal with. And I think they've got such a defensive system and the talent they're fitting the people in. So I want to see what Kirk Ferentz gets done there. I think that's a big one. The other is Rutgers that I think has slowly been making. Rutgers and Maryland have this continually made progress, and you wonder when that like breakthrough season happens. And getting rid of divisions helps those guys.
Very much.
They were staring in the Big Ten East, just up at Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State. Really tough. And then new coaches at Indiana and Michigan State, I think, are going to be interesting. Both schools feel really good about their hires and where the program's going. How long will that all take? We'll see. First year, I don't think you got a lot of expectations, but I think there's a lot there in the middle that maybe the Big Ten's a little more interesting than normal. And there's Northwestern, no stadium. They tore their stadium down.
Yeah. Yeah. That's going to be interesting, right? And they've got it like on camp, converting like a practice field almost.
Right by the lake. Yeah, right by the lake. That could be some
practice
chilly
where
games
you
there.
Play. Yeah. And then some games at Wrigley late in the year, I think, because after the Cubs are done. Yeah.
Dan mentioned Rutgers. That's a good call. You looked at their schedule. They miss Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State.
I wouldn't miss it. I wouldn't call missing it.
Yeah.
They're not missing them.
Yeah. Imagine going from that division with all those teams and then boom.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a bouquet 10 years in the making of, sorry, we stuck you with playing those every single year. Yeah. If that Rutgers gets a quarterback, their quarterback play has just been brutal. Their passing game has been brutal the last couple of years. If they can get anything out of that, they it's a Schiano team. They're going to run and they're going to play defense.
Wanted to bring this up. Jeff Tedford has, retired due to health concerns. Again, he was coaching Fresno State. He had to leave Fresno in 2017 to 2019. He coached Fresno, then left for health concerns. Kalen DeBoer came in. He had built that program really, really strong and took over and then got the Washington job in 2022. Tedford returned. I mean, in four of his five, he went 10-4, 12-2, 4-8, 10-4, 9-4. This was five at Fresno. Prior to that, I had a tremendous run at Cal, considering what Cal is, including coaching Aaron Rodgers and really making them. They finished ninth one year in the playoff in the rankings, 14th another time. Never could quite get his health together late, and we wish him well. He's only 62, so hopefully he's healthy and goes on. But I always thought Jeff Tedford was one of the best coaches in college football. And I really liked him at Fresno because I think that's just a great football community out there. And he had made the Bulldogs really, really strong. Did you ever cover him? How much did you cover him, Pat, through the years?
I did, yeah. And I agree completely. I mean, I just thought the world of him as a coach and, you know, pretty understated guy, not a big salesman type, just liked coaching and building programs and did an unbelievable job of it. Great quarterback coach. And yeah, it was great. I mean, a really nice fit with him at Fresno, and I'm sorry to see him have to step away. And, you know, there haven't been a lot of information about the health issues, but hopefully, you know, it's not something life-threatening there. But I've said many times, I maintain, the 2004 Cal-USC game in the Coliseum was one of the best games I've ever covered. That was Aaron Rodgers against that ridiculous USC defense when they went on to win the championship. And that was big-time football. It was my first year working for ESPN, and it remains like a one of the gold standard games. And get Cal to that level was you're a damn good coach.
Coach, five first-round picks at quarterback through his career, including his assistant. Trent Dilfer, when he was at Fresno as an assistant. Achilles Smith and Joey Harrington when he was at Oregon. Then Kyle Bowler and Aaron Rodgers. Recruited Jared Goff, but did not actually coach him. But that was pretty good. All right, we're going to conclude here. It's just Pat and I again. Ross had to upload his show and then go meet more important people than us. It's just...
He had to go loiter around lobbies with various big tech.
Part-time. He's going to break a story, though. That's the good part. Daily Mail coming through here.
Our old friend.
Yeah, it's really a report on McDonald's. McDonald's quietly confirms it is killing off one of its most divisive menu items ever, leaving fans torn. If you think I'm going to, you want, that's clickbait right there for me. Divisive?
Yeah, what would be a divisive McDonald's item? I know what my prediction
what,
would
what
be.
What is it?
But McRib.
The McRib is not
it. Even have bones. Okay.
Yeah, the fake bone thing.
Yeah, like, come on. It's just like, what is that?
The most divisive thing I got at McDonald's is, what the hell is Grimace? What is that? Why would it make a child want to have a milkshake?
Make them want to have a nightmare.
Really, all those characters. The hamburger. Like, what do you have to eat your burger quick? I don't know. Anyway, that ain't it. It's the McPlant.
The what?
The McPlant. I did not even know about this.
I didn't either.
The chain had been testing meat-free beef burgers. How can you call it a beef burger? Oh. Meat-free burgers in America. U.S. President Joe Erlington said the McPlant has been ditched because, stunning, customers did not want fake meat.
If you're going to McDonald's, you're not going there for the meat substitute.
It went for the, not going there. Reliable sources tell me that producer Joe would not have eaten a McPlant during his 24-hour. If you want to go back and listen to a great episode when Joe lost his fantasy football bet and had to spend 24 hours at McDonald's and then ate his way out. So he got there in 8 hours. Anyway, this thing was tested at several hundred restaurants in California and Texas since 2021. Developed with Beyond Meat, it was made from pea and rice proteins. While it has flopped in the U.S., it has been a hit in the U.K., Germany, Holland, and Portugal. Well, that's just one more bit of proof that we're the greatest country on earth, as far as I know.
Can you imagine you're testing that in Texas? I mean, all they do is eat meat down there. Oh, my gosh. Know your audience.
Salads were taken.
Britain doesn't have any good food anyway, so you give them a plant burger, they don't
McDonald's,
know.
McDonald's, the Brits will eat anything.
Yeah.
Death warmed over with a pint. McDonald's is now shifting its focus to chicken, which has become more popular among its customers than beef, partly due to lower costs. I did not know that. Chicken nugget, I guess. Wow. Salads were taken off U.S. menus at the start of the pandemic. They will not return.
Wow.
Here's our guy, Erlington, the McDonald's expert telling Bloomberg, if people really want salads from McDonald's, we will gladly relaunch salads. But what our experience has proven is that's not what the consumer is looking for.
Yeah. So why did you try to come up with a plant burger?
I don't know. They did. The McRib is returning to America later this year.
Okay. That's my divisive menu item.
McDonald's knows the McRib bring customers into restaurants and drive-thrus.
I cannot imagine. Like, really? Does people sit around and say, where do you want to eat? Oh, I want that McRib. Really?
Oh, they got a big picture of the McRib there. Yeah, I don't know. Not a McRib. I don't have the visceral anger you have at this thing.
I do. It's like pressed pork meat, you know, like where it's not how that works. That's not how you get ribs. You know, it doesn't look like
it's
that.
It's not ribs. No. It's McRib.
Yeah. Well, the Mick is doing a lot of work there.
McDonald's has brought bagels back to its breakfast menu. So I guess people are excited.
Okay.
I don't know. Anyway, that's our McDonald's news today. All right.
People like the McDonald's
news. I mean, to keep you up to date.
We're giving the people what they
want. People are like, how can you talk about, it's like literally the most popular restaurant in the country. What do you want me to say?
Yeah.
Billions and billions served. Just nobody admits it. Nobody really goes. There you go. Don't be looking for no McPlant. What a terrible name for a sandwich.
Bad name, bad concept, wrong audience.
McPlant.
Sorry.
I'm going to pass on the McPlant like everybody else in Texas and California. All right. That's our show. We will be back next week unless there's an emergency. Pat and I are going to be broadcasting from France. It's very exciting. And Ross he'll show up for part of it. This is the thing. We're going to go all the way to France and we're going to work the whole show. Ross can be like, I need to go to Indianapolis, man.
I had to go talk to an AD.
Nah, he's getting scoops.
We'll sprinkle a little Olympic action in Scoop there, Dellinger. I'm sure.
Very little.
Let's just hope the technology works.
Very little. Simone Biles is from Columbus, Ohio, originally, so we'll go get her thoughts on.
There you go.
Now, all right, that's our show. Thanks for subscribing. Thanks for listening to old episodes. Thanks for telling your friends about us. We will talk to you later.